Has anyone seen the movie Forrest Gump? I think a lot of us watched Tom Hanks play the lead character, Forrest Gump. And we loved him because Forrest embodies a being who faithfully, selflessly, unquestioningly, bravely, kindly, and intentionally spends his life giving and receiving grace. Through all kinds of situations, when people are angry or mean, in times of anger, hardship, bodily injury, loss, scarcity, tedium, Forrest just keeps doing the best he can. He lives out his values, keeps his promises, and just tries to do the right thing while expecting nothing much in return, really. And because of this, he is able to feel content much of the time and to care about others while those around him cannot. Grace. It's a word we use to describe aesthetic qualities of physical movement like a graceful dancer, and the pleasing social and cultural qualities that suggest poise, elegance, beauty, kindness, patience, and the like. And maybe some of us offer grace before a meal, an intentional prayer of gratitude. But the origin of grace in Christianity, grace describes a doctrine which is the guarantee that God bestows perfect love to mortals who by virtue of their flawed, sinful nature do not deserve a divine favor, act of mercy, or blessing, but may receive these anyway. Kind of like a divine get-out-of-jail-free card. Grace in Christian theology suggests that no matter how badly one has behaved or even if one has intentionally hurt others, God can deliver unmerited favor. Well, a lot of Unitarian Universalists are understandably uncomfortable with this view. Some of us left it behind or were wounded by the underpinning theology that presents those simplistic, confusing stories and interpretations of complex doctrines. In this view, it suggests passiveness and presumes a fallen humanity whose hope of being saved is up to the divine parent figure. Well, I think regardless of our individual spiritual paths and our beliefs, as Unitarian Universalists, collectively, we're a religious people with a strong affinity to self-determination in all matters. Salvation for Unitarians is a human endeavor that has more to do with character, conduct, and action. The early resistors and reformers who shaped our liberal religious movement, as we know it today, debated theological and issues and church doctrines centuries ago, and I'm not going to rehash all of those things with you today, mercifully. Well, that's another sermon too, I guess, mercy. So if in Christianity grace is about not deserving, then maybe the opposite of grace is what Buddhists call karma, because karma is about getting exactly what we deserve. Simply described, karma is the sum of a person's actions in this life and previous states of existence, all of which decides their fate and future existences. Cause and effect, fate and action, an immutable law of the cosmos. For every action, there will always be a reaction. Whatever we do will always come back to us. So whether we're aware of it or not, our thoughts and feelings and words and actions continually change and shape the world around us. So how can Unitarian Universalists experience grace and karma? Betwixt these, there's a good old word, betwixt grace and karma, I believe, lies a fertile ground for deepening individual spiritual development and the collective enlightenment we need to motivate us so we get on that road to beloved community. Because we've been sitting in the parking lot of idealism and intellectualism for a long time now. Awareness of karma and being aware of the wake, the emotional wake, the repercussions of our actions and words, these two are important. I think we're doing that with, for example, the truth, healing, reconciliation work with Indigenous issues and peoples, and countering racism and white supremacy culture within the UUA and all of our congregations in North America. It's messy, uncomfortable, awkward, sometimes painful work. And some people are threatened by it, afraid that the resulting changes will be too difficult. I believe we need grace to be an active agent in our Unitarian Universalist lives. We can and should be guerrillas of grace. Not gorilla like the ape, but stealth, aware, awakened beings who covertly and intentionally instigate moments of grace for others. Giving, doing, making things possible for others anonymously without expecting any affirmation or acclaim in return. You've heard of random acts of kindness, pay it forward. The way it works, for example, one example is when you pay for your meal at a coffee shop or restaurant, you leave extra money so that a stranger later on will receive a free coffee or meal. This kind of thing is happening in small ways and large ways through projects and initiatives that remind people to participate and to keep being kind. This social phenomenon, I think, is rooted in the universal ethic of reciprocity, the golden rule, do unto others as you would wish others to do unto you. In an era marked by declining church affiliation, busy, over-scripted lives, divisive politics, and growing social inequity, gloomy predictions of climate catastrophe and the commodification of our every Facebook post, it's no wonder people need new outlets for engaging in acts of kindness. This trend to pop up compassion works on a reciprocal level too, because the giver is gifted with a momentary infusion of hope, a little assurance that something good is still within our power in this turbulent world. Random lucky things can happen to any one of us, but recognizing and expressing gratitude for that luck and then reflecting on what we have received but did not earn, combined with the resulting awakening of our heart, that makes it grace. Unexpected, undeserved blessings when needed most. The Buddhist concept of karma is not the unexpected. It's about cause and effect. What goes around comes around. If you steal, expect to be robbed. If you gossip, expect to be slandered, and so on. Westerners have a hard time with this concept because of guilt. When things are difficult, we may think it's because we're fundamentally bad or being punished. In the midst of a sudden, inexplicable tragedy, loss, or struggle of your own, or involving your loved ones, have you ever found yourself asking, why me? And this existential question, really, the only answer to that question is, why not you? Accidents, disease, death are part of this impermanent existence. Living in denial or resisting the impermanent nature of life only compounds our anguish. Pema Chodron is an American Buddhist nun and resident teacher at Gambo Abbey in Cape Breton. She writes prolifically Buddhist teachings that articulate humor and practical relevance. Her work has deeply influenced my personal study of Buddhism and practice of meditation. Pema Chodron explains that karma is not punishment. Karma is the consequences that we're temporarily stuck with, and we can undo it by following the path. She's referring to the path of the Bodhisattva, which seeks the awakened heart. The Bodhi heart yearns to free oneself from pain of ignorance and habitual patterns in order to help others to do the same. Well, a detailed examination of the Buddhist path for Yuyus must also wait for another day. Besides, it's a path, not a practice, not a crash course that we can pick up and drop. Buddhism holds that as evolved beings, we are wholly responsible for our actions. So we are continually creating both our happiness and our misery. We create our future. That's a lesson I think we can all hold. The reason our fate is never truly set is because we have free will. Life gives us chances. It is intention that creates karma, and if we deliberately harm someone, our intentions were bad, and that creates bad karma, while good intentions always create good karma. While we can't really change karma, we can do things to change the direction of our karma. We can undo and mitigate by doing good now. Our destiny is an emergent process. We live in a state of continual recreation. The purpose of karma is to help us become better people. So think about grace and karma in your life for a minute. Have you ever been blessed or received an unexpected gift at a point in your life when it really mattered? And did you sit up and take notice? How were you changed by it? You know, long ago I received such a gift. In the 1970s, I worked as a chief cook aboard seagoing commercial ships. It was a sunny morning and our ship had just docked in a small port in Argentina. I was busy in the galley when the chief officer popped in and said, "Cook, customs are here. Can we have a look around your cabin?" Well, it's standard practice for customs officers to poke around a ship after it docks. They check manifests and the passports and other documents, and they'll look through some of the quarters for contraband. And then they'll issue authorization to load or unload the cargo and give permission for the crew members to take shore leave. So this was just another day in another port. "Sure, go ahead," I said as I continued to chop and sauté. And a second later, the second cook, Roxanne, we shall call her, was pressing against my side, excited. She whispered in my ear, "You got rid of that bag of pot, right?" And I had no idea what she was talking about until I did. A couple of nights earlier, some of my younger crew members, clearly not the officers that my colleague, Reverend Dearman, they have higher aspirations and better manners, I'm sure. But this was a I just thought I'd do that catch, friend. So it was a couple nights earlier. We had a little party in my big cabin, and it involved the usual quantity of libations and music on cassette tapes, telling of stories and jokes. You know, the details kind of were foggy until a stark reality surfaced. I remembered that after the party, I cleaned up, stowed the empties, and I meant to get rid of the weed, but instead I tossed the little bag in my desk drawer and forgot all about it. So now, suddenly, I'm visualizing the drama surely about to unfold. It's 1978, Argentina. I'll be arrested, imprisoned, maybe disappear like thousands of individuals in this country who were taken by one or another of the insurgent and corrupt military forces. Worse, my family was going to be shamed and hurt. My future was over. Chief officer returned then, saying, "Cook, will you come to your cabin for a moment, please?" And I walked woodenly to my starboard side cabin and paused in the doorway. Customs guy was standing by my desk, the drawer open. Dizzy with fear, I prepared for handcuffs and arrest. I took a breath and prepared to throw myself on the mercy of his dictatorship nation. And this is where the grace part comes in. Customs man holds up a little tin that I recognized as the container I used to store all the odd coins that would somehow accumulate from trip to trip and country to country. He said he hoped I would let him have a few coins from the Republic of Cape Verde for his collection. In shock, I moved between him and the desk drawer where the baggie sat in plain view. He was so enthralled with my coins that he seemed not to notice the contraband. "Yes, of course, take whatever you like," I said, trying to keep hysteria out of my voice as I gently shut the desk drawer with my backside. Did I deserve that grace? No. I had broken the law and shown contempt for my employer's trust and regulations, my disregard and recklessness. I was given another chance that day. Now, some might say it was just luck, but given my life, my context, I'd been living a pretty shiftless, self-absorbed existence to that point. And really, my life would have flamed out, I know it, had the outcome been any less lucky. So luck is about random opportunities. Grace has characteristics of luck, but it wakes us up, commands that we be receptive, and in turn practice gratitude. Grace demands our intentional effort. Pema Chodron suggests that everything we encounter becomes an opportunity to develop the outrageous courage of the Bodhi heart. We can use our pain and fear to open our hearts to others in distress. Transformation can occur in painful places. Adversity can bring us humility and empathy. Think of the famous bodhisattvas like Nelson Mandela, Gandhi, Mother Teresa, Aung San Suu Kyi, who were all willing to put their bodies and feelings on the line with courage and bravery. Yeah, the idea that there's a divine dispenser of grace, a God who confers grace upon some at certain times, that's really a hard one for Unitarians and Unitarian Universalists. Universalist theology suggests that a loving God is a limitless stream of grace available to any and all who bring their pail to the source. Unitarians would say we already have grace, like inherent worth and dignity, and that it is our human responsibility to enact grace with each other toward realizing a greater good and loving world community. We heard Alistair play the strains of that amazing hymn, Amazing Grace. Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound. John Newton, the 18th century Englishman who wrote the famous hymn, had been a slave trader before he became a prominent abolitionist. He said that his change of heart, which turned his life around, was grace's doing. It rescued him. It saved a wretch like me. I think grace can save and transform institutions, too. Recently, I attended General Assembly in Spokane, Washington. That's the annual conference and meeting of the Unitarian Universalist Association and all the 900-plus congregations in the United States. My commitments were to oversee a booth in the exhibit hall and co-facilitate one of the workshops happening. General Assembly is typically a really busy, activating event. Energy is high as thousands of people, Unitarians from coast to coast, arrive to network, and they become infused with a renewed sense of commitment and energy and possibility for our movement and their roles in it. The theme was the power of we, and it seemed like it was all going according to plan, going well, the usual kind of pep rally style GA, until it didn't. News suddenly broke that the hometown minister had written a book of essays with opinions of why the UUA is leading our movement astray, naming individuals and groups that he blamed for this trend. His take is that it's not a good idea to keep encouraging the big national UU focus and commitment to anti-oppression, anti-racism work, and the resulting shift we're seeing that is recentering the voices of identity groups, people of color, indigenous people, trans people, people with disabilities. He believed this was detrimental to the ideals of Unitarian Universalism. So this book he wrote sold online in advance of GA. It was available at the booth in the exhibition hall until it was discovered and pulled. The author, the minister in question, refused to speak with the GA right relations team and was banned from the conference center. Suddenly, members of DRUM, this is a diverse, these are identity group of diverse racial identities, multicultural groups within the UUA. Representatives from the Ministers Association began meeting and talking about what this all meant, what needed to be done or said. Overnight, DRUM released a statement that was supported by other identity groups, including the Native Caucus of DRUM, of which I am a member. Essentially, we call for allies to defer to those most impacted. Leave it to them to name the issues and to lead in making whatever response or demands was needed. Well, this story is continuing to unfold. That nothing is resolved yet. We ministers of colors and other who were experienced the book as a disturbing, harmful perpetration of white supremacy culture are still discerning next steps. But we did know that giving a lot of energy to counter this irresponsible, unethical, misguided behavior of an anxious white male colleague would draw energy and attention that would only continue the culture shift that we'd been trying to effect a change around. So bringing attention to racism, ableism, trans prejudice that exists in our churches and governing bodies, you know, we can't talk diversity, equality, inclusion in this faith without being willing to give power and support to those who are diversity, UUs of color and indigenous and disabled people and so forth. So as Sunday morning arrived and the big closing worship service got underway, the undercurrent of the previous day's explosive controversy was an inspiring thread, actually. Word spread through the hall, and at the closing song, a couple hundred people of color, indigenous people, a spectrum of diversity, the minority that we are when we come to UU congregations. We took the stage. We sang and wept and hugged. And for the first time in years, I thought to myself, I could die a happy Unitarian Universalist today, because I had hope for this movement again, which I had lost a long time ago. What I witnessed in Spokane was a spontaneous grace when an ugly situation meant to harm and disrupt did not fan the flames of anger and turn into a denominational pissing match. Instead, it was used as a catalyst for empowerment and love. I think that there are many ways that grace and karma for us, Unitarian Universalists, can be our path, our vehicle for awakening. We can model Forrest Gump. I think also Wendell Berry articulates in his work, Manifesto, the Mad Farmer's Liberation Front, the kind of inspiration that I'd like to leave you with today. He says this. So friends, every day, do something that won't compute. Love the Lord. Love the world. Work for nothing. Take all that you have and be poor. Love someone who does not deserve it. Denounce the government and embrace the flag. Hope to live in that free republic for which it stands. Give your approval to all you cannot understand. Praise ignorance, for what man has not encountered, he has not destroyed. May it be so. Namaste and amen.